in a vacuum? Check. Probably not.
Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you for tuning in and welcome to the show. I'm glad to be back. Had a couple days break and got a bunch of news to cover tonight, and like always, there's so many different things going on that it's kind of hard to pinpoint a place to start. But either way, if anybody would like to join the call, 718-717-8296, you could join us and let's talk about whatever you want to talk about. First thing we're going to go into is some politics, everyone's favorite subject. And then we're going to go into some all kinds of other news that's going on, distractions, fear-mongering, I mean, crazy cop stories, you name it. There's plenty of it tonight. We're joined with our co-host tonight, DB Schwartz. How you doing, man?
Doing good, Nick. I don't know where that echo's coming from. But yeah, doing good. Just, you're right, distractions, man. It seems like a lot of this stuff's distractions when Ukraine's super popping off right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even that familiar with what's going on in Ukraine. Fill us in, because we don't even have that on the docket tonight. So let's talk about Ukraine first before we jump into this other stuff we have.
Well, the big news was that private contracting firms had actually gone over and started to train the Ukrainian army. I mean, you're talking about the high-tech weapons that they have available from us, so we're arming them. We're arming them in a roundabout way. I mean, we're doing it through private industry instead of overt military shipments.
You know, which is arguably, at least it's a little more honest, right? Because that's kind of what goes on in the anyway. It's war for economic, you know, corporate interests for the most part. So at least we're not actually sending the troops in there. But what we are doing is sending people in that we pay even more with tax dollars that aren't really, you know, that aren't really held accountable whenever they, you know, do these crazy things like they did in Iraq, where, you know, what was formerly known as Blackwater was in there, you know, gunning down people and running people over on purpose and stuff like that. And, you know, these guys are receiving impunity very much in the same way the DEA is receiving impunity down in Colombia and down in South America when they get caught up having, you know, sex parties with, you know, funded by drug cartels and stuff like that. You know, one of the things, and I think that's one of the reasons why people get so angry with, you know, American presence, military government presence, in these other countries, for the most part, these guys get impunity, man, you know, and think of how long that these guys were in Japan without having any kind of repercussions for what went on over there. And, you know, all these, you know, crazy instances of, you know, rape and killing and who knows what. that goes on where these guys just basically get away with it because there's a diplomatic agreement, therefore there's no kind of accountability.
And money really does talk when you're talking about mercenaries and owning the courts back here in the U.S. A lot of these guys may get, you know, tagged as war criminals. A lot of former members of government for our government are tagged as war criminals, and they don't really leave the U.S. except to a couple of puppet countries. But these guys don't care, man. They're making $100,000 for a six-month stint, tax-free. Everything there is paid for, plus whatever they can rob while they're over there. So, I mean, that's what it is, man. Money's the name of the game.
Empire, right? And, you know, that gets us into, you know, the overarching issue with Ukraine, and it's all empire and proxy wars, and these guys are trying to play geopolitical strategies, and in the meantime, a bunch of people, innocent people, are dying in Ukraine, in the East and the West. You know, in the West, which is the government that we're backing, which is U.S.-backed, NATO-backed, you know, European-backed, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but they've instituted a draft, you know, and a draft, I don't know if anybody can dispute that a draft is definitely a form of slavery. It's conscription, you know, they force you into doing something you don't want. In this case, it's the most dangerous. You know, you're going to fight on the front line, the fight, you know, risk your life, and you don't have a choice. And, you know, that's the government that the U.S. has decided to back in this conflict. And unfortunately, it isn't really in the interest of the U.S. to go in and support this civil war.
And this draft's an utter failure, and it's just destroying the morale of the actual regular army and the Marines over there, because they're not getting any help at all. There's no reinforcements, and the replacements that are coming up are, you know, really not interested in fighting the Russian, you know, Spetsnaz or special forces, which is what's basically happening, and they're getting wiped out.
Yeah, man. It's such a complicated scenario in Ukraine, and it's shrouded in propaganda from both sides. You know, of course, we all see the Russian propaganda coming out, the Eastern propaganda, and then you see the Western propaganda. It's you know, it's just another one of these scenarios that our government has kind of gotten us into, where we're not really, you know, on the right side of things. You know, the fact of the matter is we're supporting a civil war that is killing a lot of people unnecessarily. Ukraine was, you know, I mean, yeah, they had a bunch of economic issues before this supposed civil war and revolution that they had. But now after, we're talking about a basically collapsed economy, you know, we're talking about...
And a brain drain. Like, you know how, I mean, you, Nick, talk about how there'd be a brain drain here if there was ever, like, a huge war. Well, what's going on in Ukraine now, ironically enough, is that a lot of these, you know, highly educated Ukrainians, many of whom happen to be Jewish, guess where they're going to escape the draft? Israel.
I wouldn't doubt it, man. I wouldn't doubt it. You know, and there's probably a lot of people fleeing the country right now, all the countries around it. I know there's been a huge refugee influx in Russia. And I'm sure to the west of Ukraine, there's probably a huge influx in Eastern Europe and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of tickles me that they're leaving the Ukraine, going over to Israel, and then, of course, being, you know, compulsorily conscripted for a year of service, although it's not fighting, of course, Russia. It's just fighting the Palestinians.
Yeah, it's a little different, you know, when you're, you know, when you're talking about the IDF, which is probably taking, what, like 5 to 10 casualties in the last two big conflicts. I mean, they basically, no one ever, hardly ever dies for the IDF.
It's not 50,000.
Yeah, that's for damn sure, and that's the death count that we're starting to see emerging out of Ukraine, and that's the conservative estimate. You know what I mean?
And you know what, Nick? I heard that it's an unofficial statistic, but that the U.S. has actually surpassed 100,000 now in this conflict.
You talking about between both inside Ukraine, like?
No, I'm talking about since we've, you know, basically since the end of 9/11. When you talk about all people in service that have perished, we've topped 100,000 now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you mean in overall conflicts?
Yeah, and a lot of it's not even conflicts. A lot of it's categorized as accidents or things like that. But it was 75,000 only a couple years ago, and now I guess there's been this gigantic leap.
Yeah, man, I wouldn't doubt it. You know, we've got so many people in so many places throughout the world. We've got like 1,000 bases or so, whatever. you know, it's not that surprising to think about the total amount of casualties and people getting sick, you know, accidents happening, and you know, who knows what. The toll is hard on both sides, and then the financial toll. I mean, we've already sent several billion over to the new Ukrainian government, and you know, a lot of people call that kind of stuff into question because it's like, what about the struggles that we have going on at home, the amount of people in poverty, the amount of, you know, economic trouble that we have here, the job scenario, the college debt, you know, the police brutality. And it's like, why are we sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, to a government that is conscripting its people to go fight, without even having an elected prime minister that's, you know, I mean, we're talking about a prime minister that's been hand chosen by NATO and the State Department, you know, and somehow we call that democracy, you know, and it's like the guy's not even been elected. So it's such a hypocritical, the entire thing is a huge hypocrisy.
Yeah. It's an endless piggy bank with the Federal Reserve, Nick. There's nothing we can do about it until we stop accepting these notes and kind of forcing our will on the rest of the world with our military to take this worthless cotton paper.
Yeah, well, at least they're not killing the trees anymore to print this stuff out, right? I am joined in the studio tonight by Jake Anderson. How you doing tonight, Jake?
Good, man.
We're going to get back into this foreign policy stuff in a little bit, but first we want to shift into what I know is a hot topic for a lot of people, and we were going to talk about this on the last show, but the show ended up going longer than expected, which was a good thing because we had some awesome, you know, awesome people join the show and talk about what's going on in Baltimore and you know, the crazy hypocrisy in the media that's been being played out over there. And we really broke through a lot of that stuff, a lot of that propaganda on Monday. If anybody wants to go back and check out Monday's show, you can catch us on YouTube, UCY TV, or you can go on the archive page of the page, you know, the Anti-Media Radio homepage. And you can listen to the show from Monday then. We're not going to get too deep into Baltimore tonight because we spent the last two shows, basically the whole shows, covering it. But one topic we meant to get to on the last show, which we didn't, but it's still a trending topic, is the topic of Bernie Sanders and what is his role in the 2016 elections. Is he somebody that's going to be a good thing to, you know, maybe fire up the real progressive base, which we all know is co-opted by Obama and was turned into another neoliberal movement? Or is it, you know, is he going to play that Ron Paul role where he fires up a bunch of people on the left into a lasting movement? Or is it just going to be part of this choreography, you know, part of this play that we're all being subjected to, where it's all about putting Hillary into the primary, you know, role as the Democratic nominee? What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, who is this man, Bernie Sanders? Who is this mysterious, angry independent who is not an independent anymore? He's now a Democrat. You know, he could be bamboozling us. I was bamboozled in a very embarrassing way when someone posted an article saying Hillary expected to adopt all of Sanders' positions by noon. And I don't know why. I guess I'm an idiot. I thought it was real. And it made sense to me. It actually sounded like a smart political move that Hillary would move to the left very quickly early on in the election to try and chop off the legs of any kind of more democratic socialist movement that could come in and try and steal her moderate thunder. But is it really that out of the question that she would do that? And what I ended up concluding was it doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter whether she adopts Bernie Sanders' positions or not, because at the end of the day, Obama has shown us that no matter what they say when they're campaigning, they can reverse course on that, and there will be very little recourse. Of course, we want to talk about Bernie Sanders here, and he interestingly now is pushing hardcore to the left and has adopted a pretty comprehensive democratic socialism platform. And really, I mean, it's hard to argue he doesn't seem sincere in wanting to take on the billionaires. I mean, that's kind of his shtick here, is wanting to take on the billionaires. Is he, the article on theantimedia.org is he a wolf in sheep's clothes? Could be. I mean, I think we know now that all politicians, even the good ones, are walking a thin line between just being straight on a corporate payroll. Hillary certainly is. And Bernie Sanders is not. Most of his money comes from trade unions. He is a Zionist. Not a good thing there. He's not too interested in taking on the drug war. That's a problem.
Yeah, and he's also not very good on foreign policy, man. And that's, you know, another big sticking point for me, because that's one of the things that I really care about, you know. Right. And of course, you know, I'm very skeptical about the voting system as a whole. So I don't want to like, you know, jump in and tell people, hey, don't vote, or hey, everyone vote for Bernie Sanders, or hey, everyone vote for Gary Johnson, whatever. I don't really want to do that, but I do want to kind of flush out any of these candidates that come forward, and especially the establishment ones, man. You know, and it's you can't really say Bernie Sanders is an establishment candidate, but at this point in the game, you can't exactly say he's anti-establishment per se. He has said that he would endorse the Democratic nominee if it came down to it, you know, which means that if Hillary was the candidate, he'd endorse it, you know. And that's one of the articles I wanted to bring up, is what's known as sheepdogging. And I wasn't really familiar with the term sheepdogging before today, but I definitely can see how it works, because I definitely saw how that happened with the Ron Paul movement, and how it kind of, they at least tried to propagate the Ron Paul movement into a Rand Paul movement, and the whole Rand Paul thing, of course, now he's definitely more and more part of the establishment. It seems like it's not like the radical, you know, the actual, I wouldn't even call the Ron Paul doctrine radical. It was more of a right-leaning common sense platform. The problem is now that that common sense platform is shifting. When you look at a guy like Rand Paul, it's shifting more and more to the war hawk, more and more to the Zionists, more and more to the guys that don't want to take on the drug war. And, you know, Rand Paul has had mixed statements regarding the drug war, and I've personally written an article about that, you know, where he's, depending on the audience he's in front of, he'll say, yeah, I want to end the drug war if he's talking at a college. But then talking in front of pastors and stuff like that, he's going to say, no, I don't want to end the drug war. So I can definitely see how the potential for a Bernie Sanders sheepdogging phenomena to happen, where it basically they're just going to use him, you know, to eat up and chew up a lot of the activist momentum and energy. I know a lot of my friends that are like Green Party and independents, a lot of them are like, yeah, well, I'm going to register Democrat so I can vote for, you know, so I can vote for Bernie Sanders and stuff like that. That is the wrong direction to go in, I think. I think if people are independents, they should be, and I think we should be shifting Democrats out of the Democratic Party and Republicans out of the Republican Party into more independent-leaning parties, or into alternative forms of politics altogether. DB, what is your thoughts on Bernie Sanders? I know you have mixed feelings on him too.
I mean, he seems like he's going to be another Ron Paul, but I mean, it's just one really, you know, kind of dim light in a big sea of darkness. And it's not, I mean, it makes us talk about it and it gets us excited that maybe there's some hope, because Obama's change was just change for the worse for most people. But what are you going to do, man? You get to buy back into the machine. And that's what they want. And I think we need to look for agorist methods like we've been talking about.
They want empire. I mean, no one's going to go against the empire. You guys think so? You guys think we're going to elect a socialist as president, or an anarchist? Yeah, we're going to elect an anarchist as president of the United States. He's going to dismantle the military-industrial complex and release all prisoners. It's never going to happen. we, you know, and look, I'm not an Obama apologist. He did a lot of things I dislike. But the fact of the matter is, the man wants to be there for his kids when they grow up. He doesn't want to be John F. Kennedy, you know?
Yeah, you know, even if a guy like Obama really did want to, you know, do something, and many people would argue that that Reagan maybe had those same kind of feelings at the beginning of his presidency, but then we saw...
Well, he got shot.
Yeah, we saw what happened, man. And so a guy like Obama may come into power. Now, we know that the records show that the NSA was tracking Obama and surveilling him ever since he was a... As soon as he became a senator, the NSA, FBI, and all them surveyed all of his communication. Therefore, he's in their pocket because they could use a number of different things that they probably have against him, you know, at any time they want, as soon as he steps out of line.
Yeah, he probably had an affair with Rhiannon.
With who?
Rhiannon.
The singer? The pop singer?
Yeah, John F. Kennedy had an affair with Marilyn Manson.
You're giving the guy too much credit, man. Come on.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, he's probably got some secrets that he doesn't want out. And that's the only way that you can become a candidate is if you do have those secrets, because they want the leverage over top of you. And the powers that be aren't going to take the chance of having...
Or you're controlled from birth.
What was that?
Or you're controlled from birth.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, or that's the other possibility, like the Bushes. You know what I mean?
Wait, what were you saying about Reagan? What did you say? You thought Reagan was going to come in and...
Well, it's kind of like, you know, Reagan really came in with a very libertarian-leaning platform. And then as soon as he got in, then he started realizing, oh, it's not what I thought it was. And then I don't know what happened for sure. I'm just saying that he did have an assassination attempt. And all of a sudden, it's like all these horrible things start happening, like all these bad policies and stuff. You know,
well, he was for big business, but he was for American big business, and he was not for these multinational global corporations which sprung up after he got shot.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, he probably still would have been
He was an American fascist instead of a multinational fascist.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to get out of that.
You know, so one of the things that I wanted to bring up... And one of the things that I really think is a positive thing about Bernie Sanders is that, at the very least, I hope that he can, you know, at least bring up the discourse, you know, bring up the debate and, like, you know, change the debate that we're having at these presidential elections, because we all know the Democratic election debates, just like the Republican debates, are going to be highly, highly controlled, and the agenda is going to be tightly scripted type of thing, and most of the questions are given out beforehand, and, you know, these guys have a chance to, you know, come up with their answers and stuff like that. But I think Bernie Sanders, him coming out swinging against, you know, big corporate,
yeah,
and a lot of the things that he stands for, equality, you know, wealth inequity and stuff like that, these are all big issues that are really important that need to be talked about. So I think that what Bernie Sanders will add to the 2016 debates is a little bit of reality to, you know, this pie in the sky debate that we're going to have, where it's going to be Hillary talking about how she's going to create jobs, and you know, the Republicans talking about how it's all Obama's fault. I think Bernie Sanders could actually be a voice in there, and hopefully he gets more than like 2 minutes at each debate to talk about some real issues that are really affecting people. And I'm hoping that that's the effect that he does have on the 2016 elections.
I think he could. I mean, I don't think he will be elected. I don't think it's even remotely possible. But I do think he will do what you're saying. He has been just a constant funnel of activism against the 1%. I mean, that's his thing. He's saying this country is owned and ruled by billionaires, and that's who politicians have been catering to. That's his whole thing. So if he goes into the debates with any other kind of angle than that, I think his relevance will shrink to nothing after the very first debate.
Yeah, who owns him? Soros or the Koch brothers?
Who owns him? I don't think anyone owns him yet.
Yet, but I'm saying if he wants the money to run, he'll be owned, and that's the whole problem.
Yeah,
well,
and that's...
But what if he makes that the issue? What if he makes...
Well, but it's still the media coverage, because people still need to get their news somewhere.
Yeah, you know, the fact of the matter is that the voting public a large percentage of the voting public gets a lot, if not most, of their news from the TV. You know, and we got to keep in mind the voting public, or for the most part, you know, it's people over 40, and you know, and the millennials, a lot of them have given up on voting. I mean, the stats have shown that the young generation has been like, it's at an all-time high of them not voting, because they've been pretty disenfranchised. I think they turned out in 2008 for Obama. But then when they realized, okay, we elected Obama, and basically, like DB had just said, you know, it was changed, but it was changed for the worse. A lot of the young people were disenfranchised. So yeah, I think that like maybe the most of the voting population is watching CNN and Fox News, MSNBC. And Bernie Sanders isn't going to get very much play.
Well, one thing to remember here is that this is going to be one of the first presidential elections that will be highly reported on social media. Yeah, 2012 was big social media, definitely. But social media is growing exponentially, and it's a new kind of media. Anti-media is a part of it. And Bernie Sanders could benefit from meme warfare. I mean, I don't expect it to happen too much, but I do think hardcore liberals and democratic socialists will take him to task on social media if he is bought out by a Koch brother. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, he's you know, he's already got probably the strongest grassroots social media support out of all the candidates.
Right.
Hillary's support is mostly manufactured by the media, you know, and there's a media frenzy that surrounds Hillary Clinton. Whatever she does, whenever she goes anywhere, whenever she speaks at anything, it's going to trend on Facebook, mostly because every single news outlet's going to put out four articles on it.
And unless you have amnesia, why would you ever put her in charge of the military?
I know. I mean, she's more of a war hawk than almost anybody I've ever seen.
Or she'll just leave our troops to hang out to dry.
Yeah, or both. I mean, she'll probably send them out there, and then, you know, when shit goes south, then she's nowhere to be found. You know what I mean? And
maybe she'll nuke our own troops. Who knows?
I mean,
that's like a globalist wet dream right there.
Yeah, and, you know, we all know Hillary's a huge part of all those different horrible organizations like the CFR, and you know, they say that she
Bilderbergers.
Yeah, they say she went to Bilderberg in 2007, 2008.
She was a keynote, I think.
And I mean, you know, obviously Hillary's not a good question. And you know, the funny thing I saw today, there was some polling out that showed that they asked if who identified Hillary Clinton with the term truthful. And it was something only like 40% where the people would, even among Democrats, that would describe Hillary Clinton as truthful. So I think her sham is pretty much up when it comes to the public, except for the fact that the media is totally manufacturing her support base and her, you know, what do they like to call it? Inevitability,
right?
You know, and that's really what Hillary Clinton is riding on, is basically what Mitt Romney wrote on in 2012. And I think Hillary Clinton will basically play that same role, where she comes in as the inevitable Democratic nominee, but at the same time, there's no way in hell that she could win either, because there's just nobody that actually cares to vote for her.
What if Bernie Sanders is being prepped as a viable third alternative of some, you know, co-opted guys, because maybe the powers that be finally realize that there's literally no one palatable at all from either side for anyone with half a brain anymore. You can't vote in Jeb Bush. You can't vote in Hillary Clinton. There's really nobody else that's a front runner. In good conscience, you're going to vote for who and what party?
I don't support Hillary, but I disagree. I do think she's very electable. I think the narrative that has been created is a two-party narrative. And what they end up always pushing is who's got experience, and she's got experience as Secretary of State. And
only if you don't Google her, though, dude. You just Google her.
I'm not saying intelligent people can't debunk that in their own heads, but I'm saying most people buy into the two-party narrative, and she is now a staple in American politics, and she's earned her medal, so to speak, in terms of having the requisite posts to her name. I just disagree. I think she will be. I don't want her to be president. I think she will be president.
I think that if that's what happens, and the people that can't pick up their phone and Google a political candidate, and these voting machines aren't completely hacked, which they probably are anyway, that we're going to finally have some kind of split vote or something undistinguishable from a majority vote. And the Electoral College is going to come out for the farce it is to everybody.
How would that be any different than 2000? I mean,
people were just not in the flow. They didn't understand how deep it went.
Right.
And now we know. We totally know. And not only that, we just want to get out of here. I mean, most people I know under 40, like Nick said, they don't want to be part of the system anymore. They're looking for a way to get out.
Oh, man, you're I love the sentiment, but it's most of America is like not. They're not there yet, and they're not ready to give up their Netflix and burgers. They're just not, you know.
That's true. It's just the people I know.
You know, a lot of us are lucky to be surrounded by a lot of people that are, you know, conscious as far as what's going on and are more into, like, being stewards of their own environment. Back to Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Another big problem I have with Bernie Sanders is that he won't talk about the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve, we all know, if we're gonna address the banking system, the 1% and all that stuff, underlying all that, the underwriting, you know, factor to the 1% is the Fed, you know, and ever since the Fed was created in 1913, and it got a lot worse in 1971 when Nixon closed the gold window and all that stuff. But ever since then, we've seen an exponential increase in wealth inequality and concentration of wealth into the hands of a very few, and the erosion of the working and the middle class, and the outsourcing of jobs. I mean, all these issues, man, the TP, like the whole trade deal, everything, it's all of it is underlined by this Federal Reserve central banking system. And that's one point where Bernie Sanders really doesn't talk about much. And I think Elizabeth Warren is better than him on this, you know, issue. The other thing that Bernie Sanders doesn't mention very much, and it very much is part of the Fed as well, is the quantitative easing, which I mean, it ended, but what it was a massive bailout, man. It was, what, $300 billion a year that they're just constantly bailing out, QE1, QE2, QE3. Pumping money into the banking system, into the housing system. And it's like, dude, didn't we just get done with the housing bubble? Now that you want to pump it back full of air. So Bernie Sanders, I think, really misses the mark on the Fed as well. And that's one side where I really liked Ron Paul. And that's why I followed what he talked about really closely. And I really have respect for a lot of the stuff he said. Once again, but, you know, the thing is that we can't put too much stock into one person. And that's one thing that I see is kind of dangerous about Bernie Sanders, too, is that a lot of my progressive friends, my left-leaning anti-establishment friends, are putting a lot of stock in Bernie Sanders, when in reality, we all know, and DB mentioned it earlier, man, it's the ideas of Agora and, like, building our own change rather than hoping to vote for change and stuff. And don't get
me wrong.
They're
not going to do it.
Don't get
me
wrong.
They will not do it.
I think if we can evoke change from an electoral level, I think it's great, you know, and California is a great example, because this past election, we passed Prop 47, which basically stuck a stake in the heart of the very base level drug war in California, which, you know, it defelonized most of the drug charges and stuff. And in that way, I mean, that, you know, voting could have a positive impact. But I think the more lasting impact, and the impact that you can count on to be more reliable, because we all know, if anything, politicians are unreliable. Even if you got a guy in power that was actually a good politician, a guy that actually gave a shit, he's only in there for 4 years, man. You know what I mean? And anyone that's actually, like, out there to do good, it's they're going to be challenged. And as soon as the next guy comes into power, just like if a Republican comes into power in 2016, I mean, all chances of legalizing marijuana at a federal level could go right out the window, just because he could have the veto power. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that a Democrat wouldn't do the same thing. I think Hillary Clinton would probably veto any legislation that was ending the drug war, too.
You don't think she would decriminalize it, at least?
I don't think so, man, because I think she's also funded by the a lot of the same people that have interest in making money from the drug war.
You don't think her and Bill sit around and get high together?
Oh, they do, but you got to.
They sleep on mountains of coke.
Of course they do, but you know the thing is in an empire, it's do as I say, not as I do. And the laws are written for us and enforced by the thug cops, and they're ignored by the elite. You know, and that's just that's a fact of life nowadays.
They're enjoyed by the elite.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I've got my concerns about Bernie Sanders. I'm worried about too many people putting too much faith in the guy. I am happy, about the chance that he draws a new conversation in to talk about the big issues, maybe pollution, climate, inequality.
If he can explode the narrative, like if he can get in there and just go kamikaze style, like, I'm willing to end my political career over this and just be like, ladies and gentlemen, Americans, this system is a fraud. And if he could say something like that on national television, there could be some value to this. I guess I'll hold my breath on that one.
Yeah, and you know that's exactly, I agree with you entirely, and very much back to this whole Ron Paul effect, and the thing that Ron Paul did well was it created a movement of people that said, you know what, the system has to be challenged. While at the same time, it did what I was mentioning earlier, which is the sheepdogging effect, where it did rile a bunch of people up into these kind of, I guess you can call them paleo conservatives, like, you know, Rand Paul, you know, Ron Paul's son, I wouldn't call the guy a libertarian. He's more of a paleo conservative that believes in states' rights, and you know, if you want to ban abortion, you do it at the state level, and you want to legalize drugs, you do it at the state level, and stuff like that. But I mean, the thing about what Ron Paul did is that it also brought people into the Republican Party, and that's exactly. And like I said, I've witnessed firsthand some of my friends. Like, yeah, I was registered Green. I'm going to register Democrat to vote for, Bernie Sanders, but. That those are the two effects that it can have, I think. So you got to look at both sides of it. And in the end, I don't know. Will it net a positive for the cause of freedom or a negative for the cause of freedom or a neutral? It's hard to say. I guess it's up to what the people do, you know, with the information that is presented, whether it's in the debates or whether it's the media attention or whatever that can be brought to these issues.
Voice of a new party is good. You know, everyone who knows anything about electoral politics knows that we're not going to get a representative democracy until we have more parties and until the corporatocracy is broken up.
Well, that's the other thing, too, about Bernie Sanders, man, is that he's already, I mean, who knows? I mean, he could change his mind and stuff, but he said, like, I'm running as a Democrat. I'm not going to run third party if I don't win.
I don't know why he.
And if Hillary Clinton is the candidate, I'll endorse her.
I really why he's running as a Democrat. But I guess it's to your point, man. I guess that's backing up your point, which is that he's sheepdogging it, as you call it.
Yeah, it's really hard to say.
He's prairie dogging the political process real bad.
he's what?
He's prairie dogging.
He's prairie dogging.
And this kind of leads me up into one of the big concerns I had, and this can definitely shine back to both parties here, because we're talking now about the military-industrial complex. Once back to it, back to the Middle East. We touched on Ukraine earlier, and this ties in with what happened in Texas and this whole controversy with ISIS and everything. But a U.S.-led airstrike killed 52 civilians, including 7 children. And we reported on this on May 4th, a few days ago. And it was originally from Common Dreams. But, you know, basically, the point I want to make here is that this stuff's going on in Syria with basically not even a peep coming out now. The biggest story in the media today was this thing about Tom Brady and how they deflated the balls and all this stuff. And it's like, dude, we're dropping bombs on people right now in Syria, killing 52 civilians. And we're talking about, you know, Tom Brady and all that stuff. But, you know, the thing is that it doesn't really seem like there's anybody running right now outside of the third party
you know, independence. Now, of course, you got Gary Johnson, which announced he is running. He's the libertarian guy. And you got Jill Stein, which I met actually in L.A., and she's a wonderful woman. She's most likely going to run as a Green Party candidate. And, you know, of course, these are parties that have been around for a while, and they've been unsuccessful electorally. There's a few different reasons why they've been unsuccessful, and the media is a big part of it. But outside of that, it doesn't really seem like there's anybody running, and I'm including Bernie Sanders and Rand Paul, and even Elizabeth Warren, if she were to run, I don't think she really addresses the foreign policy either, which I think to me is probably the biggest issue out there, you know, and it's just that one that nobody really wants to talk about because they can't really address the real cause behind the terrorism because that would go against all of their funding and all of the interests of the military-industrial complex. So they can't just sit here and say, yeah, the biggest reason behind the fact that there's a bunch of terrorists, why there's ISIS running rampant all over Iraq and Syria is because we went and overthrew the government of Iraq and that we've been blowing up people. Like, they're not going to come out and say that, you know, because this isn't something that the mainstream is really allowed to touch on. And, you know, back to Ron Paul, he tried to touch on it in the debates and we saw where that got him. You know what I mean? 20, 30 seconds for a 2-hour debate. That's all he would get to speak. And you can only cover so much in 20 seconds. We have a 1-hour show here and we can only cover so much. I mean, last week we couldn't even get through we only got through one topic. So I mean, this is the predicament that we're in. It's now we're faced with the prospect of, you know, no matter who wins for the Republicans or Democrats, we're going to have a continuation of the war on drugs and the war on terror and a continuation of this geopolitical resource-based foreign policy, man, you know? And that's how much does it cost us a year? How much does it cost us to bomb 52 civilians in Syria?
Enough that we could feed every person on Earth and put every person in America through education without acquiring crippling loans.
It's only $30 billion a year to feed everybody on Earth, right? To make sure that there was nobody going into hunger on Earth. $30 billion.
That's assuming that we lose 50% to rot, spoilage, and transportation. Which, if it was decentralized, there'd probably be like 10% waste, and it'd be all local farmers' markets, you know?
Yeah, man. But instead, we spend upwards of about $1 trillion, dude. $1 trillion on defense, quote-unquote defense, a year. You know, about $800 billion of it is on the books, and they got a bunch of other black programs and, you know, DARPA. You know, all this other crap that they dump money into for research and whatnot. You know, and that is the biggest elephant in the room,
right?
Because it also, not only is it a huge burden, it's a huge threat to our economic, you know, solvency, but it's also the very biggest driver behind why people around the world are trying to bomb us and blow us up and shoot us and kidnap us, you know, and do a lot of these horrible things. For one, it's a situation of destabilization that we've created in the Middle East and a lot of those countries, Syria, Iraq. We've numerous times tried to destabilize Iran.
I think it's easy to sum up that we're perpetually attempting to dominate the full spectrum of the whole planet. And we're never going to be successful, but it's not going to stop us from trying.
Well, you don't really ever want to be fully successful, man, and this kind of goes back to a prediction by George Orwell, you know, and part of the reason why they had perpetual wars back in his book, 1984, it wasn't ever to win the war. It was just to continuously expend the resources of the people so that the people never wanted to question the power, you know, the power structure that was in place. You know what I mean? It keeps everybody broke, keeps everybody having to work extreme amounts of hours, and your rents are extremely high, your food is extremely expensive, your labor is very cheap, and you're kind of stuck in a cycle where it's like, if you don't work 12 hours a day and you got a family, well then, you know, good luck.
Well, and Orwell could have never foreseen. brother. Yeah, I mean, Orwell, he predicted a lot. I don't think even he could have seen... I don't even think he could have predicted Fox News. But maybe he did. I don't know. Is that in doublespeak? Is Fox News in doublespeak?
Well, he was one of the state agents that basically had to go through and redact all the, you know, state media stuff. And basically he was the AP's past editor.
Our media is kind of like the tri-state unholy alliance from 1984, where we have like the MSNBC, liberals, the Fox conservatives, and the CNN in the middles.
Was it the is it the Ministry of Truth, Ministry of Disinformation, or Ministry of Truth? What is it in there?
Both. There's both of them, but the truth one is more important.
Someone who wrote a book report about 1984, call in right now.
You know, and the whole thing is that the whole media, the thing about the whole media opposition, you know, the Fox News and how they're supposedly opposed to MSNBC and CNN's in the middle, and hey, don't hate us, we're just the guys in the middle.
Yeah.
But the thing is that all of that information that they get, everything that they, you know, all these talking heads throw out there from CNN, Fox, and MSNBC, it's all just commentary, man. It's all just commentary over the top of what is honestly just AP. It's the Associated Press that is really dictating the news cycle, man. And we know recently found out the AP is being surveilled heavily. There was a recent thing where they got their emails hacked by the government. Huh. I mean, shit, dude. The AP, if we're going to talk about the real root of media bias, and the funny thing is that it's like, oh, AP is like unbiased. You read their articles and it's like, yeah, it's pretty much they're just stating facts. Or at least what they're saying are facts, right? But the thing about the AP, their bias shows by their choices of what they cover, man.
Right.
Like, these guys never try to stop us from going into wars. They didn't stop us from going into Libya. They didn't stop us from going into Syria. They didn't stop us from going into Ukraine. I mean, the AP, when it all comes down to it, yeah, they seem like they're unbiased, but they are the most biased and dangerous media organization in the world.
Omission of truth can be just as bad as direct lies.
Exactly. And so they pick and choose what to cover, and everything from the AP is regurgitated by every single other outlet, including Fox, MSNBC, CBS. I mean, you ever go to Yahoo, you go to Drudge Report, any of these outlets that you use, Google News, whatever. It's all just AP regurgitated stuff with a little bit of spin, depending on the ideological stance of the media outlet, whether it's supposedly conservative or supposedly liberal or down the middle, whatever. It's all based on the same stories, and only certain stories get covered, and therefore it turns a blind eye to this massive, massive foreign policy problem that the U.S. faces.
And it's also it's spreading to other countries. I don't know if you've seen, like, in Israel now, that they're having their own Baltimores now. There's a rioting in Tel Aviv, and a lot of people don't know that. And a lot of them are Ethiopian Jews, and they're being, you know, of course, unjustly treated too. So it's not going to stop here. It's going to spread everywhere.
Yeah, man. It's people all around the world now with the access to the internet. And keep in mind, I mean, the activists and the people that actually know what's going on, they're still in the minority here. You know, we're talking about, I don't know, 10% of the population. Sometimes certain issues, it's like, yeah, a lot of people know about this stuff. Talk about like Monsanto and that kind of thing. Yeah, a lot of people know about that. You know, but on some more of these like fringe type of justice issues and, you know, addressing, you know, specific, you know, shortfalls within our society, you know, it's tough to really take a gauge of how many people are there supporting. So the good news is that it's spreading all around the world. Like you were referencing in Israel, there's anti-police brutality marches going on all the time. There's so many people out there supporting the cause of the Palestinians. All over the world, man. I got a bunch of friends in Europe that they're involved constantly in actions and movements to support.
It got Lauryn Hill to cancel her concert over there.
Damn, I didn't even hear about that. I mean, see, yeah, these are the things, you know, these are the subtle things that are happening all around the world, and it very much is a rising tide of awareness of, you know, the issues and people that are caring about justice, caring about prosperity, caring about, you know, corruption and caring about each other. It's rising, you know, and it's really easy for people to get frustrated or disenfranchised because it seems like it takes so long and it's such a long process. But, you know, I always like to remind people, it's like this is a thousands of years worth of struggle that we're, you know, looking at right now. And we're the first generation ever to have access to the internet where we can just sit here and like literally find out about all these thousands of years of struggle and stuff. You know, all the people in our previous, you know, our ancestors and stuff, they, you know, the printing press wasn't only invented several hundred years ago. It's not been around that long. You know what I mean? So before that, I mean, it's all word of mouth, handwritten text and stuff like that. Now we have such access to this technology that it increases our speed of, you know, realizing what's going on and looking into the past mistakes that have been, you know, plaguing humanity and the human race for so long. But just because we have access to all that doesn't mean it's going to change overnight. And so people got to realize, man, this is, if anything, I don't want to say it's going to take another 1,000 years to where we get at least to a semi where the majority of people on the earth live under a free situation that you know is actually a decent standard of living and they have, you know, good liberties and stuff like that. Like I don't know if it's going to take 1,000 years. I mean, it could happen in a couple of decades. It could happen in 2 generations. I don't know. But I'll tell you what, it's not going to happen tomorrow. No. But what we do right now is everything we do now is only going to speed up the process, whether it's a 1,000-year process, whether it's a 30-year process or a 30-month process. Everything we do now speeds it up, man. And so the biggest thing outside of like spreading awareness, and you know, we were talking.
I have a lot of kids.
Yeah, I mean,
shit, 1,000 years from now we'll be living inside corporate computers. So, I mean, 1,000 years—that's a huge timeline. I mean, we're talking less than 100 years. I mean, the rate of information dissemination right now is so intense that I don't think this generation, most of this generation, I think, is already.
Will we die human? That's my question.
They say millions now living will never die. Who knows? I'm working on an article on it right now, but.
Yeah, that should be interesting, man, because, you know, the technology, that's the other thing, too, is that human technology has been advancing at a pretty steady rate for a long time, thousands of years. But it wasn't until we were able to make, like, encyclopedias out of all of this knowledge. You know, like I was saying, previously it was mostly, like, word of mouth. And, like, you can only remember so much word of mouth stuff. And that's why so many cultures have, like, songs to help them remember stuff and things like that. It's really hard to try to pass entire knowledge base on by word of mouth. You can only, you know, transmit so many things. But now today where we can put all this stuff in writing and store it on a flash drive or whatever, it changes the game for us. And we're able to pass information down to the next generation at a much higher rate and then our previous ancestors were able to. And so that, therefore, you know, that's why the technology, I think, has been advancing so quickly now where we have, you know, I remember when I bought my first hard drive for my old PC, it was like 80 gigs and it was like, you know, that was like the shit back then. And now it's like you got like terabyte upon terabytes in these little hard drives. I think they even have terabyte SD cards now, I think. You know, and this is like stuff that would take up whole rooms, you know, 15 years ago or whatever. Right. And so it's like now it's our ability to transmit the info that allows us to evolve faster. You know, so how do we use that for, you know, for the cause while at the same time preventing the power structure that exists right now from using that stuff against us? Because it's, think about the technology, it's always a double-edged sword.
Right. Well, that's one thing question I pose in my new article that hopefully will be up on the site soon is, will advanced technologies, you know, look at our standard of living now, look how much higher it is than it was 100 years ago, 200 years ago. You know, we have the ability to feed every person on the planet, but we don't. We have the ability to live sustainably on the planet, but we don't. So why are we to think now that, you know, more advanced technology is going to suddenly be the magic light switch on curing human injustice, you know?
Well, it goes back to the communication factor and the fact that we can start to realize.
Well, yeah. That form of technology, yeah. I mean, once we're able, you know, us being able to communicate this rapidly to each other is obvious. Obviously, the rising tide we're talking about.
Let's say back in the Roman Empire days, right? Let's just say that during that time, there was another empire that was in Brazil that happened to chop down the entire rainforest. And it threw off the entire climate for the whole Earth. I mean, the Romans would have never known to try to go stop them because the communication just wasn't there.
Right.
Now we can see, okay, look, we're starting to see all this opposition to the things like the Keystone Pipeline, the tar sands, you know, and you've seen those pictures, man. The place is just a total hellhole. It looks like hell, literally, where they're just destroying the environment out there just to, you know, extract all this oil and stuff. You know, now we're able to see that stuff happening. Before, we pretty much wouldn't see it. Now with this social media and, you know, this social networking and the citizen journalism, we actually can see the injustices almost in real time, even sometimes in real time if it's live streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And more and more people can be mobilized around it. And so that's why I think that the movement to, you know, increase freedom for people, because I don't know what to call the movement as a collective. I mean, I don't like to name, given any certain name, but I just think of it as a group of people that are trying to improve the world for the rest of, you know, for people that come later on. And for themselves, of course, too. I think that it's going to exponentially allow us to increase our efforts, just like it's exponentially allowing the technology to get more and more advanced. You know, and it'll allow us to more effectively take this system on. But I mean, it's hard to predict how it's going to turn out because so many different factors go into it. We are coming to the end of the show here. I want to go through some quick, crazy cop news, just because we can't forget about the police state and what's going on. There is some good news that came out of Massachusetts. A small town is... Basically, their police chief said, we're not going to charge people for petty drug crimes anymore. And if we do catch them, we're not going to throw them in jail. We're going to take them to get rehab and stuff like that. So that's a good step. We covered that on the Anti-Media. Carrie Wedler covered it. Make sure you check that out. But we do have some crazy stuff. There was a kid that was acting up at school, and the kid had ADHD, but he's only 5 years old. And cops ended up coming in and arresting the kid. I mean, I guess maybe it's not technically arrest. They handcuffed him and took him away.
For what?
Because he was just being disorderly, you know.
They arrested him for not being able to focus.
He was combative, quote, out of control. And I mean, the mom wasn't even alerted really, like before he was taken into custody, the mom wasn't even told. Now she's going to try to sue because of, you know, this whole scenario. And that's insane. It's a 5-year-old. And then we got this other story, and I mean, this is just nuts. There's a couple in Florida that got caught having sex on the beach, and they're literally facing 15 years in prison. And this is on the Anti-Media. Make sure you check this out. I mean, this is just going to show
and
that
sex offender status, right?
Yeah, and they're going to be sex offenders. And this just goes to show how far overreaching the police state trying to police sex life.
I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.